We all want a business like Netflix or Amazon Prime. Businesses where once a customer engages with them, it becomes automatic and a part of their lifestyle from then on. But how do you build that forever transaction? I'm Robbie Kelman Baxter, and I have been studying subscription and membership models for nearly 20 years. In this podcast, my guests and I share the secrets and strategies of the membership economy. Join us for Subscription Stories, True Tales from the Trenches. If you've ever had to wait for your doctor, first in the waiting room and then in the examining room, or struggled to get an appointment, or had trouble getting a prescription filled while on the road, you know why primary care in the United States is in such desperate need of disruption. One Medical has been transforming primary care through the power of membership and customer centricity since 2007. In 2023, One Medical was acquired by Amazon for nearly $4 billion. Dr. Joseph Michelli has written a well-researched book on One Medical's journey and what enabled such rapid growth and such strong customer engagement. The book is called All Business is Personal, One Medical's Human-Centered, Technology-Powered Approach to Customer Engagement. In today's conversation, Joseph and I talk about how the company reimagined every step of the patient journey, One Medical's three key success drivers, and what the future of healthcare might hold. Joseph, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Robbie. Thanks.
How did you become interested in customer engagement and service excellence?
It's probably my mom and dad's fault, but I am a psychologist by training, so that probably fits. They said early on that you're not on this world to be served, you're on this world to serve. And if you can find a way to do that, you create value. If you create value, you'll be fine. That's pretty much the lesson.
That's what your parents said?
Yeah, pretty much straight away from all the time. Whenever I be a little haughty or pretentious, they would just say, you're not here to be served. So there's variations of that message, but it always came across the same. If you're going to create value in the world will be okay for you. If you think the world owes you something, it won't. And so I think in, you know, I was going to do that through professional services as a clinical psychologist, worked in healthcare for a while as a clinical psychologist, and then as an organizational development specialist. It was in that organizational development specialist phase and some work I did in graduate school with the Pike Place Fish Market that really took me out of the traditional mental health services business.
Did you say Pike's Place Fish Market?
Yeah, where they throw fish.
What, were you a fish thrower?
Or? Oh, well, that's a good story. No, my first consulting client was Johnny Yokoyama of the world famous Pike Place Fish Market. And ultimately, he and I wrote my very first book together called When Fish Fly. And it really was a follow-up to all those fish videos that were out in the universe talking about play, make your day, choose your attitude, those kind of things.
That's amazing. I love that. I think you're the first person that I've interviewed in 80 some odd interviews that has mentioned working in a fish market. So I love that. And a great title for a book. You recently wrote a book. What number book is that?
14, I think, if I'm counting correctly. I think it's 14. Yeah.
And why do you keep putting yourself through that?
I don't know. I don't have many more left. You know, Rob, as someone who's written books and it's between the writing and then the marketing, it's all challenging. But then again, we can cry a river what big people problems those are. I mean, the beauty of it for me is impact, the potential to change the way people think about something and maybe give them a few ideas to improve their success rate. It's kind of like being a tree when people are in the maze and trying to say, hey, you might want to consider going left instead of right because that's a dead end coming up. That's what I enjoy about the process of writing and the output of writing.
Yeah, helping people see around corners.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of people I've had on the show that have written books wrote a book. They shared all of their knowledge or a lot of their knowledge, the pattern recognition they had earned either through being in the trenches or through research, and then they're kind of done. But you have written several books, many of which are about particular entrepreneurs or organizations. 13 books is a good number. What made you write All Businesses Personal, One Medical's Human-Centered, Technology-Powered Approach to Customer Engagement, after all of these books that you had already written? What made this one worth writing for you?
Yeah, I think all of these books are worth writing in some form or fashion because I've had the chance to work inside these companies. And in this case, I'd worked inside of One Medical and had worked with, and this is the beauty of business, I think. You work with somebody in one place and then they move on in their career and then you get a chance to work with them in a whole new setting watch their leadership with a new set of leadership problems and challenges. So this particular individual is Amir Dan Rubin, and he had been the chief operating officer over at UCLA Health Systems when I wrote a book about them. He then went on to Stanford Medical, and he was responsible for all of their healthcare facilities and went to Optum and then ultimately ended over at One Medical. He was over at One Medical. He took over for the founder. There's a lot of investment money in play, which is a very different scenario than a state-run healthcare system. And so we took on the challenge of how do we take this startup to the next level so that it would have greater impact. And lo and behold, they did that. And Amazon buys them for $4 billion. So it was a wonderful journey with them.
I'm guessing most people listening are somewhat familiar with One Medical. But for the ones who haven't heard of them, can you explain briefly what their business model is and what value they aim to provide to the people that they serve? And of course, because this is Subscription Stories, if you can make sure to share the part about the membership model itself, that would be great.
Yeah, I was going to start by saying it's an accidental subscription model is what this company is. It was not designed to be a subscription model in its first iteration. It was designed to be a disruptor in healthcare. And it just so happened that the disruption was sufficient enough that they did what Jim Gilmore and Joe Pine talked about in the experience economy, which is make the experience so great that people want to pay to have access to it. And I think that's really the journey for One Medical. It started with a guy by the name of Tom Lee, a Harvard-trained internal medicine specialist. He also went to Stanford Business School. In Stanford, he did a project using then BlackBerries, which took the physician's desk reference, really essentially just a, you know, all the drug interaction kind of things, and took it from being a bound copy to something that was transferable digitally through the BlackBerry, as best we could access anything then. And so that should have been enough, right? But he said, no, I really want to disrupt the actual service delivery face-to-face experience. So he went about hiring a bunch of technologists in Silicon Valley, opening their first location in San Francisco in a high-rise building, not in a medical campus. And he starts just taking apart what is the traditional healthcare system and trying to find ways to solve those problems by optimizing an experience. And in short, they did things like making sure you could make your appointment via the app, not have to call somebody. This is pretty early on. They also were able to take away the idea of having to sit in a waiting room and sit in an exam room. So those kinds of pain points, the redesign of the entire experience, asking why do we do these things, led to an experience that people really enjoyed going to this location. So access to the app costs something. So they decided, let's make it a membership. And quite early on, they had no idea what to charge. And they also didn't have the e-commerce that we have today. So he asked for a check and said, does $39 a year sound like a good price point to be a member of One Medical? And he got some checks and didn't get some other checks, and I think kept everybody anyway at first. And over time, they've perfected that model so that you are paying an access fee to same day, next day appointments, the use of the app, which creates lots of scheduling convenience, lots of other conveniences, but lots of communication interface between you and your providers and the insurance billers and all that. But you're still having to pay for your healthcare just the way everybody else does through your health insurance. It's really kind of concierge light, if you will. If you really want to pay a lot of money, you can get into concierge medicine, have somebody at your beck and call, or you can have this kind of hybridization thing where you're getting a little better quality care through membership, but you're still relying on your health insurance to pay the bill.
And the doctors, he was the first doctor I remember reading at the beginning, right? So he was sort of the phlebotomist and the doctor and the front desk and everything all combined. And then over time, he sort of systematized that experience for the primary care relationship.
Yeah, and the membership experience too, that whole idea of how do we onboard members? How do we refine our unique value proposition for members? Why would anybody want to join our membership? How do we get people to be members in places where we don't have a physical presence? Like if I don't have a doctor in your town, how do we get you to want to use the app because you're going to get access to virtual care that is relevant to you? So just looking at all the membership touch points, journey mapping the membership experience, putting people in responsible for that over time. But you're right. In the beginning, he was the chief strategist, chief digital designer, membership recruitment. You put the label on it, that's what he was.
Yeah. And I think that's really important because a lot of times in member experience, if you've never sat in a middle seat in economy between two large people, it's hard to have a sense of how horrible it is. you know, when I go on a plane, I sometimes wonder, do any of the execs ever sit in the back of coach by the bathroom? Because then you really get a sense of how broken the experience is. And the same is true. I just had an appointment to get my mammogram. And I'm at Stanford, right? So it's supposed to be great. Waited for a half an hour, went in, waited for a few more minutes for the technician to come in because their time is more valuable than mine. No one explained anything. And you just realize that it's, even at a great place like Stanford, it's still really hard to get treated like a human being and treated with some level of respect. So it's been many years. How many years since One Medical launched?
I don't have the exact date, but it's about 14 years. Yeah.
14 years, but it's still an issue at a lot of the big healthcare providers.
And, you know, we're really talking about One Medical is primary care organization, right? So it's that family doctor experience, if you will. They are integrated, though, with health systems like Stanford, right? And so they could be the front door of the primary care, but they're going to send you, refer you to Stanford specialists. And in that scenario, you should get easier appointments because you're a One Medical member and those relationships should get you in more urgently than maybe a primary care physician who's not in that system integrated. Those are some of the benefits, but it's still, it's navigation in healthcare is one of those classic things that really, really challenging. And we've not come anywhere close to solving that. And we're really going to hit a shortage here of just care providers, right? So part of the membership opportunity is to have the ease and convenience and assurance you're going to be able to get care in a world where there's less and less people to do it. My favorite kind of use case for the membership is that if I were to travel to Palo Alto today, and I were sick when I got off the plane and I had to decide, what do I need to do? The membership gives me the opportunity to go to the app and then check through a curated list of symptoms. So I'm not doing Dr. Google and convincing myself I'm near dead. And just a curated list of symptoms that triages what level of care I should get. Is this an emergency room visit? Should I schedule an appointment with somebody who's in the Palo Alto region, who's a provider for One Medical? Can I do it with a Treat Me Now? Click on a button on the app itself and then pop comes a provider who's licensed in California who can then make the prescription and send it to my hotel near me because they know the area. That's the value proposition of the membership, right? It's the ability to say, we've got an integrated medical record so that the virtual care provider is part of the system. Unlike maybe my healthcare system where I could get a virtual appointment, but they're a third party who probably doesn't have a very well integrated record with what's going on in my primary care's office. And I don't want to get in the weeds of all this. I think what I'm pointing out is the value of the membership is that there's integration. There is some streamlining. There's some ubiquity of care. There's some triaging of what do I need in the moment and help me make that decision. Because my lifestyle is, you know, on the road all the time. So I need to be able to get care wherever I am, not where my primary care physician is.
It's great. I mean, what you're really pointing to is member-centric approach and also an approach of what is the ultimate outcome that a member seeks and how can we keep layering in value to solve that problem for them? And so for you, I want to stay healthy. And if something happens to me wherever I am, I want to be able to treat it, respond to it quickly to, you know, I always think about healthcare is ultimately about maximizing healthy minutes, right? Happy, healthy minutes, and happy minutes are not in the doctor's office waiting room, right? It's treat me, give me the information I need. Give it to me where I am. And it's just a very, very different approach to thinking about health than waiting until someone has a problem and then responding to it. Okay, so you wrote this book. You structured it around three key drivers that make One Medical so successful: the people, the innovative design and execution, and then an emphasis on sustainable growth. Can you talk about some of the ways that each of those pieces have come into play in building the business that they have?
Yeah, I certainly would imagine there are membership models where people are not as important as it is in healthcare service delivery, right? Streaming opportunities and things that are platform dependent. But when it gets to healthcare, you got to have talented people who are available to serve in the space. So you have to have all the technologies in the membership model that avail you the ability to access those people at the right time, the right place, but you need the people. And those people need to be able to do their job without having to do it in their pajamas at night after they clock out of work. So using some of the technologies to make sure that they take the burden off people so people can actually have work-life integration. And I think that's a big emphasis point, a lot of this first section of the book. So if you are a membership company that does rely on people to execute and deliver, I think there is a real understanding of how do you select them? How do you develop them? How do you train them? How do you help them drive efficiencies? I think a lot of the conversations we have about people culture often sounds like it's really creating cruise ships for people. We want great experiences for people, but we want to create high performance teams alongside of a great culture. And so I think what you see in this particular model is the real emphasis on using lean technologies and Six Sigma and taking walks to Gemba and all those things that are necessary to develop a culture that is not only purposeful and autonomous, but also is one where there is accountability structure and celebration of performance. So that's the first part. And I think on innovation, it really is constantly looking at what you just said a minute ago. How do we keep adding value in the now for parity? Sometimes it's just a straight parity play. Like we've got a competitor who's in a membership model and they offer these things. And, you know, if we're not providing that value, we're at a disadvantage. And then there is, what's the differentiators? What are the things that no one else is offering that we can offer at scale? And then let's start trying those and figuring out which of those are resonant with the audience. And then we just kind of build those out and try to stay ahead of where the customer is going. I think those are the two big ones. And the sustainable growth is, I think, largely anchored to the idea that you can't go for it all at one big swoop. You have to kind of do this incrementally over time and start looking at value networks and expanding through value networks and the like.
I think one of the challenges for a lot of entrepreneurs is that they see the world they want to build, the vision, but then they're all the way back here at the beginning. And you can't, I mean, unless you have tons of resources and a crystal ball, you can't build it all at once. You've got to keep testing and iterating. And in some cases, you actually have to generate revenue, generate some profits, demonstrate to your investors that you have a scalable model. There's a lot of milestones you've got to get through before you can go to the next level. So many organizations really struggle with what's first, second, and third.
Yeah, and I think the beauty of this is if you can prove the test of concept, right? If you can get to break even fairly well, if you can get some virality on growth, those are things that really start to fuel the engines, right? And if you're not getting those things done, you can want to change the world all you want, but you're probably going to change a very small world. It is really trying to find that resonance and being able to leverage that to get broader and wider and deeper.
Did One Medical do anything to get the viral word of mouth, or did it just happen on its own?
Strategically, I think what they did is they created a beachhead and they really nailed it within their area. So they knew they didn't have a marketing budget. This is the difference between now with Amazon, right? Like Amazon has a giant megaphone with their membership model, which for which they've attached the One Medical model. But in the old days, I mean, they just had to get viral in San Francisco. I mean, the fact that you're near Stanford means you were kind of hearing about One Medical in the very early days and that virality was happening. And then they get enough money for advertising. You're going to see it on a billboard. They're going to be kind of avant-garde on for the time you're standing at this bus stop or whatever, train station at the BART. You could be, or what germs are present while you're standing here at the BART, right? And if you want to get checked, we're down the street a corner. So they got to that level of advertising. It was just in time, in market, very local and edgy. And then they had to get a second beachhead, right? They had to establish this could work outside of San Francisco. Lovely part of the world, but is it going to play in Chicago? So they had to prove that, and they did. And they developed those partnerships. And this is part of scaling too, which what I was trying to get at by kind of going wide. They developed the strategic partnerships with healthcare centers who already had relationships and already had networks of lives under care. And so then they could get a fast start in a market because they were accessing the front door for those patients. And the quality proven in another market was able to be demonstrated as something we'd likely expect here. And you get a couple of those under your belt before you know it, people are clamoring to join you.
So how you started to walk me through how their experience and their systems have changed from the time they were getting started until now or until the past few years. What are some of the things that changed as they grew? You mentioned partnerships. You mentioned culture.
Big culture, yeah. I think the technology team got bigger and bigger. I mean, as much as they had technologists to start, they just really went into getting as many high-quality medical technologists as they could. And so they were using AI very early on so that when I texted in a question on the app that said, not sure why I'm not getting reimbursed for this service charge, there was no human that was going to. I mean, it was going to an AI that filtered that into the administrative queue. If I'd have mentioned sniffles in that message, it would have gotten into the clinical queue. So I think the emphasis constantly on how do we use technology, and clearly early on quality checks to make sure that those are getting routed correctly. But for the most part, take less time for some human being to have to respond to and then triage it and send it to the appropriate place. So I think that became the emphasis. It's gotten extremely wild since then in technology. So now they are using AI capture in appointments with permission. So instead of my clinician having to write notes, the AI is capturing what was going on. Clinician can review those notes quickly instead of having to focus on writing them and taking them out of the interpersonal moment. And just more and more of that, the constant sense of where can we use this tool reliably, knowing that it still hallucinates? Where can we use it not to make clinical diagnoses, not to do anything that's really at harm, but a lot of the administrative repetitive tasks, just big investments in that. So there was more time for people to do what only people can do.
And you also, when we were chatting, as we were setting up for this interview today, you were talking a little bit about the amount of data and the ability when they reached critical mass to really be able to work at a population health kind of level. What does that mean, both for the experience that an individual patient receives and for the value of the business?
I'm going to stay with an example that I like to talk about because I love to talk about colonoscopies. There's a few things more exciting to talk about. But since nobody wants to do them, and when you turn 50, if you're a member, they're going to send you a task to do your colonoscopy, and they're also going to send you a test kit that you can do by mail so that you have at least a screening, since most people aren't doing that because of the intrusive nature of the colonoscopy. And so they're able to look at what messages increase the probability that you're going to actually do the screening, right? So we can kind of look at how do we activate people to their own health through effective messaging. And they can do A/B testing on that. They can look at what percentage of people do that. They can figure out what's the right cadence and pacing to send those messages to people. Just a variety of lessons learned about how do we encourage people to slip into the slipstream of wellness. And so many other examples of that. They can look at their treatment rates on something like diabetes and their interventions that they would try, whether that's group interventions or specific counseling or cultural sensitive counseling to diabetics. All these things are part and parcel to understanding what is the most efficient way to deliver something in short supply, which is healthcare services for high need. And so they're actively involved in constantly trying to learn their interventions. And they've got a lot of data just on the app. Just what did you click? What did you do? What did you complete? What were your results and findings? What was your next action after you did it? Did you read the follow-up information? With lots of wearable devices too, they have lots of data that they can access and utilize too for understanding how you're engaging your health.
Yeah, I saw a crazy stat that according to Aflac, 90% of Americans delay preventative care.
If 50% of all disease is lifestyle related, let's just take it there, right? Like the more you can learn about how to help people do what they want to do. Most of us want to be healthy. Like I think most people want to make the world a better place every day they wake up. I think they want to be healthy. They want their kids to be beautiful, right? There are certain things we really absolutely want. And I think if you can help people get those things, you're creating value. And that's, for me, I have so many memberships. I don't even want to think about the kind of money I spend on memberships. But every one that I do is about making me successful in something that is important to me, whether that's in an entertainment or music or whatever it might be. Those memberships are, as long as they continue to create value and continue to innovate, right? And they grow. And they don't just stay in one lane. The very three things we just talked about with One Medical, as long as I keep doing that, I'm a member, man. I need to make my life successful.
Yeah. I mean, for me, membership is about the long game. When an organization has a membership mindset, they're thinking, these are the customers I'm going to have for a long time. And so it's not about solving a problem in the moment. It's about helping them on the journey. It's about seeing them around corners, as we've discussed. It's around pattern recognition. And it's ultimately around helping them achieve an ongoing outcome that is important to them, whether that's, you know, I want to have the most fun possible in my free time, or I want to go as far as I can in my career, or now I want to have as many healthy minutes, happy, healthy minutes as I can. And I think that the world of membership is only just scratching the surface of healthcare. Healthcare is still kind of a mess. And I know my example to you of the mammogram, you're like, well, Robbie, that is not a One Medical service, the mammogram. You have to go to some other provider. And maybe that's why
So far, the technology may catch up with that because it's a pretty draconian torture thing for most women, from what I gather. So they'll find a better way over time.
Yeah. And then there's the machine, right? It's a having to go there and deal with the people and all of that. And then the machine and then waiting for the outcome. And
if you just think of the Cologuard as an example, I mean, that notion that we could come up with a screening that is sufficient for us to be able to figure out when we need to intervene. So I think we're going to see more of that. I completely agree. And I would go one step further, and that is that given the doubling rate of knowledge in the world right now, I think any membership that curates good knowledge in a sea of crazy information is in and of itself a great value. So just if you could, the app alone for me on One Medical, where I can get a triage of the questions I need to know about a condition on my own terms, is much valuable to me right now.
Yeah. Now, you talked about the acquisition of knowledge and the speed of change. Now, One Medical is owned by Amazon, maybe one of the largest leaders of that change. What do you, in your crystal ball, what's going to happen with One Medical now that they have the distribution and the platform and the technology and the relationships of one of the biggest direct-to-consumer businesses in the world?
Oh, well, if I only could answer that question, I'd know where to put my money, wouldn't I? I mean, I'm a realistic optimist, so just know that. I tend to lean into optimism, but I am pulled back a bit by realism. On the pure optimistic side of this thing, it's going to be this curation platform. You're going to be able to go to Amazon, much like you would go to Grubhub, or they are the platform. You go there, you get to select from them all these subspecialty treatments that they have culled for you, and you can access them. And gosh knows how much add-on that is beyond the base membership to get into the platform. But once you're there, you're going to have somebody who's super, super knowledgeable about something that, like nutrition, that maybe you wouldn't, you know, your family doc may or may not have be. So I think you're going to have that. That's this super positive. They're going to have an integrated suite of services. They're already doing some of that at the expense of companies like CVS and Walgreens, where you used to have to wait around inside the building and they call your name over the loudspeaker after you handed the prescription and you still didn't know how much you're going to pay. So it wasn't until after you shopped over all the discounted candy from Easter that you could then get to this to place where they told you how much it was going to cost you to leave the building. So I think because of that, Amazon Health Services, which includes One Medical and Amazon Pharmacy, they're getting integrated so that provider who I've just clicked on while I landed in Palo Alto and they told me I needed this prescription, they can tell me it's going to be same day. They can get it to my hotel that within 4 hours. All that's going to be integrated. That's the good side. The downside is that you have a company that specializes in logistics that is now in the human service space. And there is nothing in the Amazon history that I can see. Whole Foods might be somewhat of an exception, but it's still very supply chain driven. That is as dependent on humans as the service delivery. So person-to-person care and healthcare. So it'll be interesting. I mean, if big companies have not done well in healthcare. So that's the hedge you have to make against all of this. And I don't try to solve that in the book. I think I talk more about how do you create a company that really is a membership business that is sellable for $4 billion to Amazon. The rest will be determined.
Yeah. Nobody knows what Amazon's going to do. And we're seeing lots of member-centric startups, certainly here in Silicon Valley, but all over, that are picking away at some of the chronic health issues. One Medical really took primary care. But we've had the CEO of Midi Health, talking about women's health at midlife, menopause, perimenopause. We had 30 Madison. That's a company that has identified the 20 top chronic health issues that doctors don't care about, but patients care a lot about: baldness, weight loss, gastrointestinal upset. And they're going after them one by one, saying it may not kill you, but it does make your life a lot worse.
Hims, Hers, all those brands that are specialized to either men's issues, women's issues, will they all thrive? And that's the new frontier, is creating membership models around that, subscription-based models around it. Or is it going to be that they all go to an Amazon platform someday? And just as the people who sell to Amazon now aren't Amazon companies, right? Well, some are, but most of them aren't. And they're just the aggregator, and you get some benefits by being a member of Amazon as it relates to access in some of these sort of places. That's the question. Now, Amazon decided to buy One Medical. That's clearly the strategy they took on this particular frontier. Will that change over time and they go to an aggregation of these other specialty options? And those specialty memberships may very well want to have the eyeballs of Amazon and the traffic that Amazon generates through its own membership platform. The membership of One Medical blew up when they bolted it onto the Amazon membership. So as part of Prime, it's like $9 a month or $8 a month. I don't know what the current rate is to be a One Medical member. And it was a discount from maybe, let's say it was $12.15 before. Suddenly there was this pulling you in through the Prime channel into the One Medical membership. And that's an add-on to your regular Prime membership fee.
Yeah. It's fascinating. And there's so much else that I want to ask you, but I know we're short on time and I'm hoping that we have time to just run through a speed round before we part.
Let's do it.
You ready? Okay. First subscription you ever had.
Oh my gosh. Rolling Stone magazine.
Love it. Your favorite subscription right now.
My favorite subscription right now. Oh man. This is like, which is my favorite child? Let's just stay super safe. I will say guitar. It's called Ultimate Guitar. And yeah, guitar lessons and downloadable sheet music.
Okay. Advice for new grandparents.
Oh my gosh, I've got 9 grandkids. So savor every single dang moment of them and then send them home sugared up.
And the last place, not including One Medical, where you received great service.
The last place I received great service was at a restaurant just about a week ago. And after the dinner was over, the owner came, did his table touch, but walked me to the door, opened the door for me and just to ask, make sure I knew where I was going next and if I needed any directions. What? Yeah, that happened.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Amazing. Joseph, thank you so much for being a guest on Subscription Stories. I hope you'll come back soon.
I'm a huge fan of yours. Thank you.
That was Dr. Joseph Michelli, the author of All Businesses Personal, One Medical's Human-Centered, Technology-Powered Approach to Customer Engagement. For more about Joseph, go to www.josephmichelli.com. And for more about Subscription Stories, go to www.robbiekelmanbaxter.com/podcast. Also, I have a favor to ask. If you liked what you heard, please take a minute to go over to Apple Podcast or Apple iTunes and leave a review. Mention Joseph and this episode if you especially enjoyed it. Reviews are how listeners find our podcast, and we appreciate each one. Thanks for your support. And thanks for listening to Subscription Stories.